Or you will hear a miracle, at least probably from your perspective. For once in 27 years of preaching, I have absolutely nothing to say about this text. Amen.
Shortest sermon ever.
I know, it's great, it's awesome. Oh, I should have known Miguel would be in the back. Yes, I don't have to hear this! This is what I... Yeah. Somebody sing a song! Miguel's our former music director, so he always thinks we should sing. I mean, seriously, this particular text about the unjust steward, as it's come to be called, is one of those really, really difficult texts. And so this week, as I always do, I got up early on Monday morning, I translated the texts from the Greek, I checked out all of the commentaries, and even got out my wonderful, huge volumes. I have 3 volumes on Luke alone. It takes up this much shelf space. And page after page, I read about this text. And then I went back and I read the church fathers to see if maybe they had anything to say. And it turns out, nobody has any idea what this is about. I'm so relieved. I thought it was just me. But it's interesting because a lot of the folks who have tried to interpret this text have sort of placed a lot of stuff on it in order to make sense of it. I mean, think about the story. There once was a man who was a steward. He's a rich man. A rich man had a steward, and the steward, turned out, had been cheating his boss. Fair enough. This is the Gospel of Luke, the gospel about justice, care for the poor, all those cool things. And so in this particular text, what ends up happening is the steward, realizing he's about to be fired, makes a plan. And his plan is, I'm going to cheat even more. I'm going to call those who owe my boss, and I'm going to have them pay less because, you know, if I get fired, I might have to go dig deep. You know, look at these hands. These are not ditch-digging hands. Well, I mean, mine are, but his were not. I can't do that, and I'm certainly too proud to beg. And so instead, I'm going to cheat my boss even more so that I will have friends who will help me. And that's exactly what he does. Now, in the Gospel of Luke, in general, this behavior, I think you could predict, would not be considered laudable. Fair? I mean, Luke is the one who chastises the wealthy for robbing the poor. Luke likes Amos. Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring ruin to the poor of the land, saying the new moon will be over soon so that we may sell our grain. We hope that all of these religious observances will get out of our way so we can get on with the business of making money. Luke does not like that. But in this text, what does the master say? By the way, as an employer, I doubt I would ever say this. But he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You just cheated me out of a whole bunch of money. I'm so proud of you. It flies in the face not only of what we expect, but what we expect from Luke. It threw a bit of a monkey wrench into the early formers of the Gospel of Luke as well, because in their trying to figure out what this all meant, they added stuff. Like the whole thing about righteous mammon and all these things, whoever is faithful in very little is faithful also in much. Everybody was trying to make sense of this really crazy text. But in light of the Gospel of Luke, it makes no sense. So tell me, this is the interactive part. I have no idea why this is here. Do you? I'm not asking you, because you'll say, well, that was put in to allow for an additional motet to be sung. And Scott's thinking, 2 motets. I'm serious. Well, what do you think this means? Yes.
At least you got
some
money.
Who?
Because even if they couldn't pay the whole thing, they could
But we don't know that, right? We have no idea. It doesn't say in the text. And they said to the steward, oh, thank you, because, you know, we really couldn't have paid the whole thing anyway. And they were honor-bound and legally bound to pay their debt. Any other ideas? I love that idea. But it's just like the end, you know, writers at the end of the Gospel of Luke, they're like, this makes no sense. So let's say that they couldn't afford to pay their debt. You are no help. Help me here. Nothing. I'm just checking for any IRS agents out there. In the interest of our 501c3 status, I will refrain from comment. Maybe that's it. But why? Absolutely, that's exactly right. That's why he does what he does. But why does the master say, way to go, dude? You just cheated me out of even more money. Yes.
Using money for its true purpose.
Ah, there we go. Maybe that's it. Well, that's where I'm going with it. Thank you. He's a plant. What if it's not really about the money? What if it's about loyalty? What if it's about what matters in the world? At the end of the text, someone appended this. No slave can serve two masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God, and I'm going to use the Old Testament, or the Old King James Version, mammon. You cannot serve both God and mammon. We live in an age these days where our very being is wrapped up in wealth. The accumulation of, the keeping of, the worry of. As a matter of fact, Jeannie's been going through this whole mortgage servicing thing or mortgage deal. And it turns out there's this thing that's really important in the mortgage world and around money. It's called servicing debt. You have to service your debt. It's a technical word. What they really mean is you have to serve your debt. We all do, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that you will not do and do. But what happens, you know, if you miss 3 car payments? They come and get your car. I remember the first time my dad, because it happened more than once, the first time my dad didn't pay on a car, and they came in the middle of the night and they hauled the car away. Right? That was bad enough. But it was my mother's car. Lord of Goshen. We serve debt. And we're so wrapped up in the accumulation of wealth and worry thereof. People spend their whole lives doing nothing but worrying about money. But money isn't the issue. It's who we serve. Our tendency is to look at this text and think that wealth itself is bad. Wealth itself is morally neutral. Money is morally neutral. It's just a tool that you can live or live without. But whether you're poor or rich, you can be just as attached to money. A poor person worries about not having enough. What does a rich person worry about? It's just a matter of scale. But what if the Gospels is trying to get at the same point as Amos? What if our real call is not to be enslaved to the worry over wealth and stuff and position and all of that, but to lay out for ourselves a life with God and with each other? In that sense, we're all unjust stewards, right? We're all trying to figure out what's best for ourselves. But the key is for it not to define us, to define our relationships and our being and ourself to the point that we cannot see anything else, because we can't serve two masters. will either love the one and hate the other, or despise one of them. But if we know to whom we belong and whose we are, the rest begins to take on its own perspective. That we belong to God and our wealth does not, we do not belong to our wealth nor our lack of it. That our greatest fears and desires are not attached to what we are, but whose we are. Listen to Amos one more time. Alas, for those... Sorry, that's next week. By the way, you get Amos again, he's going to hit you again. Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over? How can we get past all of this so that we can get on with our business? Buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals and selling the sweepings of the wheat. It is only through our relationship with a loving God who gives us all that we have that we truly can give ourselves to the one to whom we belong. That we are not owned by our wealth or our worry, but we live in the freedom of Christ. Amen. I still don't think that's it, but I'm going to keep working on it. Bruce, you had your chance.